Hi, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Charles Kahn. First of all, I just wanted to apologize for the late start to this webinar. We had a little bit of a technical glitch, but now we're off and running. So hello and welcome to this month's Overseas Retirement Circle webinar. Today, we are very excited to talk about Santander, the small but largely modern and bustling Spanish city built on a series of hills overlooking the Bay of Biscay. My name is Charles Kahn, as I mentioned. I'm the managing editor of Overseas Living Letter, and today we're joined by one of our favorite authors, Lucy Culpepper. She was the one behind our January issue on Santander. So thank you, Lucy, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, hi, Charles. Hi, everybody. You're very welcome.
So as Lucy introduced us in January's issue, we were talking about Santander, a handsome city on Spain's Atlantic, offering magnificent views of the Bay of Santander and the Cantabrian Sea. Known for its lush greenery, this area of northern Spain is referred to as the Costa Verde or Green Coast. Santander used to be the haunt of Spanish royalty, and much of the architecture reflects the glamour and richesse that long relationship endowed the city, with the royal palace, the courtiers' homes all along the seafront, a ritzy casino, and very well manicured parks and beaches. Very beautiful place for sure. Santander is not a touristy spot, nevertheless, so the cost of living doesn't suffer the hike that many of Spain's southern costas tend to. A couple could live modestly here in a rented two-bedroom apartment from about 1,500 euros. With a damp but mild Atlantic climate, Santander's weather offers great, fairly constant average winter temperatures between 46 and 53 degrees Fahrenheit, while the summers rarely go above 86 degrees. Snow rarely falls, but it does rain, and you can expect it every month, with the most rainfall occurring in November, up to 7 inches. But before we get down to the details of northern Spain's elegant and friendly city of Santander with Lucy, let me just remind listeners that you're welcome to send us questions via the web while we're talking, and we'll do our best to answer them as we go along. So now over to Lucy. Let's talk a little bit about the general lifestyle in Santander and in Spain in general. So starting off, what do you imagine would be the biggest cultural differences for a North American coming to Santander?
Well, hi everybody. I think probably the main cultural differences are same probably for a British person going there, and that's the language. It's going to be you need to learn some Spanish if you're going to live in Santander. And so that's one big impact for somebody thinking of living there. Another big difference is sort of the whole eating times issue. They eat everything later and stay up later, and I don't know how they get enough sleep, to be honest. But anyway, so yeah, that's a big switch. If you want to be part of the scene and enjoy life there as the Spanish people do, then I think you need to make a little sort of switch in your dietary and eating habits. So yeah, big change there probably.
Right on. I was first told about this area by a lady I met from Bilbao, who was a hotel owner in Panama at the time. But yeah, she painted a great picture of the Cantabrian coast. To me, it doesn't sound like it's a rugged destination necessarily, but what did you notice there that were any major lifestyle changes specific to that area?
Major lifestyle changes, did you say? Sorry. Yeah. So I don't know if you can still hear me, but I don't think there are, it's a modern
There you are.
city, it's a modern country. I don't think you'll face any sort of deprivation or anything like that. I don't really feel that there are major lifestyle changes other than what I mentioned before in terms of the language and eating times and things like that. The infrastructure is very good. I think, in terms of, you can drink water out of the tap. There's electricity is everywhere. The internet is very fast. I don't think from that point of view you'd notice a big change in your lifestyle.
Right on. How about in terms of other type of products like appliances, ready-made food, those type of creature comforts people associate with back home? Are those readily available, or would you want to have to go without?
No, everything's there. You might have to just shop slightly out of town, and I just, you literally a mile away from the center is where the really big superstores are, like Carrefour, and all the big appliance stores. But I think generally speaking, anywhere in Europe, you're going to find that appliances are smaller than in the States. They're starting to get a little bit bigger, you know, like they get sold as, you know, American style refrigerator kind of thing. So that, you know, there are some things that are bigger. You won't find the really big washing machines and that type of thing there, but everything else, it's all there and all available, and the foods are just going to be different, you know, but just as good.
Right on. So in terms of the seasons, we talked a little bit about it already, but does the climate change much year-round? I think most people, you know, imagine kind of a clammy, cold climate, but how does it compare winter versus summer?
Well, I don't describe it as clammy. I think I'd describe Panama as clammy. But it's pretty much, it's quite four-seasonal, except for you won't get, you know, a lot of snow. You definitely get the four seasons, spring, summer, autumn, winter. It does rain a fair amount. The most highest amount of rainfall is going to be in November. And then we just spoke earlier in your introduction, sort of, you're looking at sort of, how would I describe? Well, it's never going to be freezing because you're right on the coast. So, but it can get pretty chilly because of the winds coming in as well. So you're talking, you know, around 46 to 53 degrees Fahrenheit. And then in the summer, it's, you know, hot, but not baking hot. I mean, you might in some places where you stay, if you stayed in the city center, you might have air conditioning just because it's, you know, in the center, you don't get so much of the breezes going through. But I've been there in at the height of the summer three times and didn't find the heat oppressive or humid. There was not high humidity.
Right on. Well, switching gears a bit, you mentioned a little of the history of foreigners in Spain, plus with their, you know, substantial tourism industry, although as you refer, it's mostly the domestic market. But I do imagine there's the locals are used to foreigners there, particularly Brits. But did you encounter a lot of North Americans?
Actually, don't think I encountered any North Americans when I was there, and also not in my previous visits either. That's not to say there aren't any, but I didn't hear any American voices or speak to any North Americans there. Lots of other nationalities, mostly other European nationalities. There's quite a lot of Dutch people come down to Spain on that side of the country. A lot of French people, and as I say, British people, because that does have the link across to England via the big ferries, the big boats coming directly across from the UK. So, but not many, or if any, Americans. Nope.
Right on. Yeah, a little bit off the radar, I think, for our part of the world. But you know, that could be a plus, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, definitely. So for some people, it'd be a negative, and some people, it would be a positive thing. So.
So in terms of volunteer opportunities, a lot of our readers, they're always looking for ways to give back. Did you find any organizations or groups that are dedicated charitable type of projects?
Well, in Santander, there is actually a charity called Ser Joven, which is to be young. So that's S-E-R and then Joven, J-O-V-E-N. And that's a charity that specifically focuses on young people and helping young people with challenges that they have, whether they're homeless or they're just struggling with life at home or whatever the issue may be. And they're often looking for volunteers for different backgrounds. So that would be something to explore. There are also some animal related charities as well. In Spain, and I'm pretty sure there's one in Santander. I'm afraid I haven't got the web address for that, but I can send it on.
Right on. Yeah. If anyone's interested, just shoot us an email and we can get that info to you. So as far as activities, it seems like there's a lot to do here, especially outdoor type of things. You know, the shore is right there. I'm sure hiking, wildlife is just plentiful. But what about the things involving city life, museums, churches, theater, that type of thing? Is there much to do?
Well, there are plenty of there's a good number of museums and art exhibitions. So there's the Botín Center, which I commented on a fair bit in the article, which has changing exhibits. And in itself, actually, it's a fabulous building. It was worth I wasn't very interested in the modern art that was in it that week that I was there. But the building itself is amazing. So you can go right up onto the top of it and get this fantastic view out over the bay and across to the other side to Somo. So that's a really focal point in Santander. Then there's Museum of Fine Arts, there's the Cantabrian Maritime Museum, and there are various private art galleries around the city as well. And there's also the Palacio de Festivales, which holds lots of exhibitions and events. And then just to the, if you tire of what's on in Santander, I mean, they have a changing, you know, exhibits and things going on through the year, but should you sort of tire of it or want something a bit bigger, a bit more spectacular, then just east by about an hour, its drive is Bilbao, where there's the Guggenheim Museum. And then if you go west, there's a small town called Comillas, which if you're a Gaudi fan, Gaudi of Barcelona fame, there's the Sunflower House is in Comillas, so that's worth visiting. So, you know, there are different things to do outside of Santander, but I think within the city, there's enough going on unless you're sort of really into, if your idea of heaven is being in Paris, where there's just endless museums and exhibits and that, you might find Santander a little bit limited. It's not huge.
Right on. But still, it sounds like plenty for, you know, any culture vulture really to sink their teeth into.
Yeah.
So what about education? Could you give a comment about the public versus private in terms of Spanish education?
Well, Spanish education has suffered a little bit over the past sort of 10 years since the big crisis that happened in Spain, and that a lot of good teachers came out of the education system. But anyway, it does. There's a private system and there's a public system, and then there's what used to be called the concertada system, where parents would pay a little bit of money. It was kind of semi-private, where you paid a bit of money into it. Now that's not called concertada anymore, but there are schools where you can still do a voluntary contribution to pay for things like textbooks and outings and things like that. So there are those three types of school systems still there. And more in all of them, actually, they're teaching English, not just as a language, but they'll teach, for example, science in English or geography in English, because they recognize that English is so important. And actually, it's the younger generations in Santander who will speak English to you. So the young girls, for example, who were in the tourist office, I would say they were probably early 20s. They were all fluent in English. But then you step out of that into the slightly older age groups, and you'll find that the English is not so widely spoken, because it's only in fairly recent years that they've been really pushing for school children to learn English.
Very interesting, and especially related to seeing that more as a global trend. Like everywhere you go, it seems like people are really pushing the English now with the younger generation.
Yeah.
Well, let's actually now talk about housing. So were there any specific parts of the city where you noticed expats were more likely to congregate? And if so, why were those the areas that they would choose?
You know, I would say there isn't a sort of area, it's not really big enough to have its own sort of mini micro areas of expats. But I think that people who go to live there, and certainly I would be the same, they go to live there, you know, if I was choosing to go there, I would want to be in walking distance of the coast, of the sea. And because that's the main reason for its being, really, and the main attraction of it is just really lovely beaches. And the beach walk, sidewalk, the paseo is just fabulous. And so much of Santander life is focused on the beach. So, you know, I think that's a really important issue. You know, if you're not a beach person and you don't particularly into the sea and boats, I think it's probably not a place for you. But if you love that, if you love the sea and the changing coastline, because it is a changing coastline, because it's quite a wild coastline, then you know, you'd really enjoy Santander. So I think that, you know, that foreigners as in general will be buying property or renting property where they can see the sea.
Makes sense. Absolutely. So you mentioned how it's possible for foreigners to buy here, and certainly the properties that you selected for us to publish in our issue, I mean, there were some really great bargains in there. I just am wondering, just to start off, what are the requisites to fill for a foreigner to be able to purchase? Are there a lot of hoops to jump through?
No, there aren't many hoops to jump through, actually. You've got to register for an NIE document, which is the National Identity Document. But apart from that, there really aren't many hoops to go through, no.
Nice. And now, just based on the reading, it sounds like the current market is towards a low point. I don't know if you'd agree, but where do you see the local market, and where do you see it turning next?
Ooh, now let's get my crystal ball out. Okay. I think it's still a bit unknown. Some of the local people I spoke to felt that it was stabilizing. But then, you know, when I started really looking at property prices and how much was on the market, I'm not sure, because there are a lot of good looking properties at really good prices. So I think there's still a lot of people really hurting, and, you know, it's a very different scene to the costas of southern Spain, you know, where massive development went on, and a lot of foreigners moved in and, you know, or didn't, and you know, that it was just a huge overbuilding, issue. Mm-hmm. And on the Santander coastline, that didn't really happen as much. There is definitely, there has been a lot of development there, but not in the same way. So I think that the people that have suffered there, or where prices have dropped, are local people who, you know, are out of a job, but they can't afford their mortgage, so they're having to sell their properties. So it's really difficult one to say. I don't know if the prices are going to drop down further. And also, of course, it's very highly politically related too, as to what's going on with the shenanigans with the Spanish government. So my crystal ball's a bit cloudy, sorry.
No doubt. Yeah, and you're completely right to mention, you know, the whole situation there. It's very interesting. So, yeah, I guess you could almost characterize it as volatile. But I want to know, what would you suggest for someone to go check it out, you know, to get familiar with the local market, either for buying or for renting? Like, how did you go about things?
Yeah, I think you've got to get there, rent something, you know, very short term, you know, get an Airbnb apartment, or, you know, stay in a hotel, you know, get something for maybe a couple of weeks, then walk the streets, look at the areas that I mentioned, see what you like, and then perhaps find a longer term rental in the place you think you're going to enjoy. And once you've done that, then, you know, whilst you're living there in the place that you think you like and renting, then you have the chance to sort of really embed into the area and meet realtors, go and see properties. That's the way I would do it. Yeah.
Right on. And would you have any tips for finding a real estate agent to work with? I'm just thinking, how difficult is it to find someone who speaks English and is used to dealing with North Americans?
Well, I would say that certainly the companies that deal with the sort of upper end of the market, the ones that I went into, they did speak English. The ones in the sort of more low, mid to low end, I've struggled to find English speakers, you know, within the offices of some of those companies. So the sort of upper end people are called Engel and Volkers, or Micheli. Micheli was the one that was recommended to me by the tourist office, and they said that they had English speakers, and they did. So you could start with a company like Micheli and see what they have to offer, talk to them. Maybe they'd recommend somebody else that, you know, they could work with, that you could work with. I think it's just a case of knocking on a few doors, to be honest, and finding somebody that you click with and that you feel can show you places, you know, or you find someone, maybe, you know, go to the tourist office and tell them exactly what you're looking for in the place you're looking in. That might work. And again, there's the magazine that I mentioned, it's called Intercambio Cantabria, which is also online. It's also a website. And there are a lot of adverts in there, and there are some in English as well. Not many, but there are some in English. So that might be worth looking at as well.
Right on. I recall you saying, do yourself a favor and pick up a copy of that right off the bat.
Yeah.
So in terms of finding a real estate attorney, would you say the same, just, getting around knocking on some doors, or are there other tips to find someone to work with?
Well, I did the Rolodex that goes with the article. There's a property lawyer I mentioned in there. Now, I've never worked with him, so I can't say for sure how great he is, but he definitely speaks English. So it's called Jaime de la Lastra, and his contact details are in the Rolodex.
Absolutely, and they certainly are. For anyone who's just curious, you can reference your overseas living letter for this month, and you'll find the information there. In terms of real estate agent fees or other buying costs, are there any things that people should know about?
Well, on top of the sales price, you have to sort of estimate that you're going to spend another 10%. That's sort of made up of about roughly 3-4% for the notary, for the registration and the town hall fees. And then the rest would be the agent fees. So I think 10% roughly on top of the price that you see.
Right on. That's pretty fair, I would imagine. So in terms of financing, is that available for foreign buyers?
Yes, mortgages are available. They're not as great for a foreigner as they are for a Spanish person, but you can get a mortgage. You'll have to have your NIE number first, which is your tax identification number, in order to get a mortgage. But it is definitely possible to do that. Yeah. So you're going to get maybe, you might need to have put down a minimum deposit of 34% of the cost of the property. If you're a non-resident, a resident would be about 20% deposit. So it depends whether you're going to go for residency or not as to how much you're going to have to put down before you can get the mortgage.
Right on. So for someone who's interested in a property that's buy to let, or, to make some money off of the tourist trade, maybe when they're not using the apartment, say, are there any specific areas that you'd recommend looking in?
Well, I think you need to, as I say, I think the most popular areas are within walking distance of the beach or the beaches. So you need to look around Puerto Chico or El Sardinero, because I think, anyone who's coming there for a holiday, they just really want to be by the sea. So by the sea, but also fairly close to the center of town for the restaurants and maybe for the, buses, so they can go on trips if they haven't hired a car, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'd look at Puerto Chico or El Sardinero.
Right on. And if you were to purchase, the million-dollar question, where would you choose in Santander?
Those two places. One of those two places. Yeah. Because
Fair enough.
Like I say, you want to be able to see the sea. The last thing I want to do is go to a place that's on the sea and then not be able to see it from my, Paris or wherever it is. That's kind of frustrating, I think.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Well, now let's get into residency. It sounds like residency is pretty straightforward for foreigners who want to become legally resident there. So what are the visa options for expats, and what are the most common ones that you know of?
So for an American or a Canadian, you can travel to Spain and stay there without a visa for 90 days. So you just fill in that little piece of paper thing that they give you on the aeroplane, and you get your 90 days, without any problems. And you can, once you're in Spain, you can apply for an extension to that. But you need to do that before 3 weeks before the end of your initial 3 month stay. And then once if you decide you want it to stay long term, you've got sort of two options. You go for the long term residence card, or you can go for what's called the golden visa, which requires an investment of 500,000 euros. So those are the two big differences. So if you want to just go for the regular sort of application for a long term residence card, You once you're in Spain with your residency visa, So if you want to stay longer than 90 days, you have to apply for your residency visa, which is called a visado de residencia, before leaving your home country. So can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I got you.
Okay. So, and then once you're in Spain with your residency visa, and you then apply for a residency card, so within the 30 days of arriving there. So this is all explained in the feature article as well. So it sounds complicated, but it's not. And you do that at the foreigner's office, which the details are in the Rolodex. And you'll need some documents to back it up. Nothing particularly complicated. Things like passport, photographs, proof of an address in Spain, that kind of thing.
Right on. I was just going to ask is if there are any of the visas that come with the ability for one to work.
The golden visa option will allow you to work, but the long-term residency visa doesn't.
Right on. And if anyone were to be interested in, you know, like a retiree visa, that doesn't seem to exist, right?
No, that doesn't exist. No.
Okay, right on. So switching gears a bit, let's talk now about the banking situation. You know, we're based in Panama, and it's always, you know, such a difficulty for Americans to open an account here. We hear it all the time. But how is it for a foreigner in Spain to open a bank account?
It's not difficult, and it's not like in Panama, because I've tried to do one in Panama too, and it's like, whoo, no, that was too difficult. Forget that. No, it wasn't that. It wasn't too difficult, but it was onerous. So in Spain, you've got two choices. You can open a bank account as a non-resident, or you can open a bank account as a resident. And it's a fairly straightforward process. As a non-resident, you have to have your ID card, a document to prove your address of where you live, and a document to prove your employment status. So if you're not employed, if you're retired, to be honest, I'm not quite sure how that would work, but you could improve income status. If you could prove your income status, I would imagine that's the same as your employment status, because effectively what they're looking for is income. So, you have to have everything translated into Spanish by a sworn official translator, and that's pretty much it. So you can open a non-resident account. Then if you want a resident account, then that's when you have to show your national identity, your tax number, your NIE number, and then go through a similar process. The difference of the two accounts is that the one has more facilities and is a more flexible account. That's the resident account, whereas the non-resident account is a very basic account. Yeah, but both can be done, and you can apply for the resident account online. In some cases, you can apply for a non-resident bank account online, and I would say trying with Banco de Santander would probably be your best bet.
Right on, cool. Let's now get over to healthcare. It appears that the public healthcare is pretty good quality, but accessing it as a non-EU retiree, for instance, would be maybe difficult. So I'm just thinking, what are your thoughts on the private insurance? Like, is that super necessary for anyone thinking about moving here?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't hear that very well, but
hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're having a delay.
Yeah. So, you're right. And absolutely, Charles, in saying that in general, a non-EU person won't be able to access the Spanish healthcare system. They'll be able to access the hospitals, but they'll have to pay for access to it using private healthcare. So, and a company like Sanitas, which is part of Bupa, is a popular one. I think that's just something that you have to factor into the cost of living there. But once you're there, the healthcare, the quality of healthcare in Spain, I think is generally speaking very good. And I had quite a discussion with Elena, the lady who owned the Airbnb place that I stayed at, and she was regarded very highly, the hospital in Santander, which is called Valdecia. She said that was very good quality.
So is there anything that you would not seek treatment for elsewhere? I don't know if that made sense. So, you know, like, it sounds like anything that, you know, you would need healthcare wise could be treated there, no problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say everything there could be treated, no problem. And she mentioned to me, Elena, I think I put it in the article, that this was got some very specialist equipment in Santander, which is only in, I think, three other places in Europe. Cancer treatment equipment. So it's a teaching hospital, so it has, you know, right on the, you know, it's at the cutting edge of medical care.
Excellent. So would the doctors then generally speak English?
Yeah, in fact, Elena said that they did. I asked her that specifically, and she said, yes, you'd find that doctors do speak English, particularly the ones that are specialists. You might find that, you know, your day-to-day general care physician, your family doctor, might not, but there will be one, you know, more than one, I'm sure, in Santander that does.
Right on. And now, in terms of insurance, you mentioned Bupa, which is one of the international carriers that we recommend. But what about local insurance providers? Did you get any information on that, or is that something recommendable?
Well, I would use Sanitas.
That's right.
Yeah, Sanitas is one that I've used in Spain. And they were good. You know, I went through my pregnancy and birth of my daughter using Sanitas, and I had no problems with it. So I would look at that one, and they are part of Bupa, but they are specifically for Spain.
Gotcha. Right on. Well, let's now talk about getting around. It sounds like you can do without a car in Santander, but I don't know. Would you agree with that? At what point would a car be necessary?
I would say you can do without a car. There's really good bus system. They're modern, clean, efficient. They run on time. There's trains. It's really cheap to get to the airport. You know, it's €18, I think it was, to get to the airport. It's a little tiny airport, so it's easy, quick in and out, and just getting around Santander. It's not a really big city. I walked for the whole day one day, and I did cover about 14 kilometers, so that's about, what's that, 9 miles? And I went everywhere, all over the place, up and down the hills and everywhere, up and along the seafront, backwards and forwards. Yeah, if you're fit, healthy, then I think you could manage without a car. If you were to live slightly out of town in one of the developments outside of the main center, I think you would possibly find life without a car a bit irritating, because every time you wanted to do any shopping or anything, you'd have to get a bus to go to the shops, and then you'd have to drag all your stuff back. Out, which is tends to be up hills, you know, the little developments outside of the center. It's definitely possible to live without a car. And there are some people who live in the center who don't have a car, who will jump on a bus, go out to the big supermarkets, do their shop, and then get a taxi back to the center, you know, and it takes them straight to the door. I think it's definitely possible. Depends how much you want to explore locally as well, how much you want to do little mini journeys, or if you're happy using public transport.
Well, it sounds like it's a lot of options, which is great. I like that. So if you wanted to buy a car, would it be difficult to find one? Is it an affordable option? And how is the parking?
Well, parking's always different in European cities than in the States, because in the States, I think you don't really have to park. You just pull in, don't you? I think you might find parking a little bit challenging, just because there isn't much space. A lot of people who live in the outer areas will have underground parking that comes with their apartments, but in the centre, a bit more of an issue, the parking, finding parking. Finding a car, no problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, as anywhere, you know, there are car sale places all over the place, and mm-hmm. secondhand and new. So yeah, that wouldn't be an issue. You know, they're generally smaller cars than they are in the US, but that's probably a good thing because the parking is smaller too, and the roads are smaller. So
right now, do people drive on the right side? Is it over there? Awesome. And what are the road signs like? I saw that there wasn't too much English for the little research I did, but is that even a thing? Like, do you even need English on the sign to get around?
Well, not really. I would say there's no English on the the signs. you've got to know where you're going and know your north, south, east, west in Spanish. That would probably help. And recognize the name places, as you would anywhere, driving anywhere really, that if I'm going there, then I'm going to pass this city first before I can get to that one, kind of thing. So yeah, some basic understanding of the locales and the compass points might help.
Nice. And so back to the bus system, the train system as well. So how easy is it for a newcomer to kind of intuitively navigate that?
Well, I found it very easy. I mean, I do speak Spanish, but I think that I went on a bus. I came into the city on a taxi from the airport, but I went back to the airport on the bus. So I went to the bus station. I walked from the little apartment I was staying in with my luggage and walked to the bus terminal. And it was centrally located. They're very helpful. The guy behind the ticket and the ticket office spoke English. Or there's also machines where you can just, press buttons to say what you want, as long as you can understand a little bit of Spanish, you'll get by that way with the machines. But the people behind the selling the tickets, the one I dealt with spoke English. So, and he was very helpful. So I think the bus system is good and easy to manage. And then within Santander, you can buy a sort of monthly pass as well, that so you can hop on and off buses, that take you up and down the paseo and take you up into the other parts of the city. So it's pretty easy. Yeah.
Cool deal. Well, as we start wrapping things up, let's now look at some of the negatives, some of the cons. So what would, in your opinion, be some of the main drawbacks to be living in Santander as a foreigner?
I suppose, it's kind of not a drawback depending on what you're like, but I'm going to say the climate because, it does rain. That's why it's so green and beautiful. So if you want to live in a desert-like dry area with, really high temperatures, yeah, probably not going to like that so much. But if you, like I do, love greenery, I don't care about putting my raincoat on and getting out and, hiking in a little shower, it's not going to bother me, then that's not going to be a downside. So I think, the climate really depends on the kind of person you are. I personally like small cities. I think they're great. You get to really know them well rather than a really big sprawling city. Of course, the drawback of that is there aren't so many facilities, perhaps, or not so quite so much going on. But so you could say that's a downside. It depends on what your preferences are. So I think those are probably the two things, the climate and the size of it. Not really downsides from my point of view, but it could be from somebody else's who wants something bigger or drier.
Right on. So in terms of crime, are expats and foreigners targeted, generally speaking? It seems to me that it's kind of a low crime area, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. What do you have to say about that?
I totally agree. I got the impression, and from speaking to people, that it's very low crime. I had no sense of feeling, as traveling around and being out in the evening, of any I had no fear to do that, no fear of walking around and sitting out in the plaza on my own with lots of, there was always lots of couples and groups, and there was just never a feeling of any hostility at all. There's one area of the town, of the city, that's more of a low income area, and Elena, the lady I spoke to a lot, she said that would maybe not an area, would be not an area to perhaps walk around at night in, just, but she said she didn't know. But then she said, I haven't heard in all the years I've been living here of anybody ever being harmed there. So maybe that's a slightly a local prejudice thing, I'm not sure. But she said to me that crime was super, super non-existent. And I got that feeling, you know, it's a very clean, tidy, cared for city. Oh, and I did walk all over it. So, and I didn't, into the area that she said, don't go into, but that I did go in daylight. But, yeah, so I think, you know, when you see that cared for aspect of a city, it does make you feel that, you know, crime is probably low. And that was definitely backed up by what she said.
Right on. Great to hear. So last thing on this, the topic of downsides, just to touch a little bit on the financial crisis. I know Spain was hit hard. Generally speaking, they had huge unemployment rates, probably still digging up from that. And of course, there's the whole Catalonia thing. So is there anything along these lines that, you know, readers, listeners should know about? Should that prevent someone from visiting the region?
No, I really don't think it. I don't really, really strongly don't feel it should prevent you from or a listener from going to visit. You wouldn't, if you stepped out of a sort of time warp and you didn't know there'd been a financial crisis, I don't think you'd. I think you'd have you would not have a sense that there had been, is what I'm trying to say. So there's no sort of feeling of people walking around with hunched shoulders looking, you know, terribly sad about everything. They're just, it doesn't strike you that way at all. You know, and Santander is a very stable city. It's not, its whole being isn't totally focused on tourism. Its port activity is dependent on people coming in, but it's also goods as well. So it hasn't been hit by tourists, the number of tourists going down who are coming to visit. But although having said that, I don't know if that happened. I don't know if the number of tourists from the UK did fall, but it didn't give a sense of that at all, that there's a big problem there.
Excellent. That's great to hear. So summing up, what kind of person do you think would enjoy living in Santander best?
I think it would be somebody who is keen to really embed with a Spanish, northern Spanish lifestyle, who enjoys the outdoors, loves the sea and being on the sea and using the sea, you know, sailing, kayaking, surfing, you know, there's a lot of cycling. If you like climbing, there's the Picos de Europa, which is right on the doorstep. It's absolutely stunning mountain range. If you like to socialize and sit outside in the cafes and, you know, just enjoy the hubbub of Spanish life, on the plazas in the evening, love eating seafood. If you're into seafood, you'd love it there. You know, I think it's somebody who just really wants to get into the Spanish way of life. It's not somewhere, if you're looking for somewhere that's, you know, got a secured kind of gated community kind of thing, you won't find that there. Although there are developments where, you know, it's gated, but not in the sort of expat kind of big gated community sense. They're small little gated communities. I think it's got to be someone who wants to get into the Spanish scene and enjoys the outdoors.
Excellent. I think that sounds like me, to be honest with you. Well, that's all the questions we have time for today. Thank you, Lucy. That just leaves me to remind all the listeners that today's call has been recorded. So in case you'd like to hear it again or you missed some of the details, you'll receive an email over the next couple of days with instructions on how to access this call. So that was all for Santander. Thank you, Lucy, again for speaking with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Charles. It's been a pleasure.
Well, again, thank you all for listening and also for being an Overseas Retirement Circle member. I look forward to speaking with you again next month. Take care. Ciao.